are listening to Wells Tech, episode 575, recorded on Tuesday, November 13th, 2018. Encouraging emails. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. On the show today, we're joined by John Rudot, who talks a little bit about his use of MailChimp in sending automated encouraging emails to his congregation. He's also going to be speaking at the Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership Conference next summer. So get a little bit of a sneak peek on his presentation. We also talk about Flickr and some of the changes they're making to their service and what that might mean for our photo library. Interesting picks this week. And C18 resources are available. You're not going to want to miss that as Christmas is coming and a great opportunity to use those evangelical resources. All that and much more. Stay tuned. Hello, everybody, again, and hello, Sally. How are you today?
I am awesome. I'm a little bit chillier than I was last week at this time, but not as cold as you are, I bet.
Well, I view fall as a very necessary season, because if you jumped too quickly into single digits, you know, I think I don't know that our bodies are made for that. But so it's in the low 20s today, windy but sunny. God has provided at least a little relief in that respect. So I hesitate to ask what's cold down there.
Well, the wind is what's really making it cold. I think we are reaching 40 today, and I'm looking out my window and seeing someone sitting outside in a lawn chair. She's got a coat on, but she's sitting outside, so it's not too bad, I don't think.
Do those winds rock the house?
Yeah, actually, they do. Funny that you ask. I was just feeling that a little bit right before we started recording, so it's a new experience for me.
Right. Well, we're back at it, 575, and we are continuing to locate our Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership speakers from around the globe, or at least so far, I think they've just been in Wisconsin, but we promise they won't all be from Wisconsin, I don't think. We've got to find somebody outside of the state. Mm-hmm. So, but we found John Rudot this week talking. He's going to be presenting a couple sessions, but one that we really wanted to talk to him about today was related to, I thought it was, his title is very intriguing, MailChimp to send automated encouraging emails. I think we've talked about MailChimp off and on over the years as a good electronic or e-newsletter tool, and it does actually a lot more than that. But the automated part was intriguing, and the encouraging part mm-hmm. was intriguing as well.
Definitely. I've heard of marketers using this kind of technology. They call it drip email sometimes, where, say, someone new signs up for an email list. They have this set of newsletters that they send out to these new people. And it doesn't matter if they sign up today or next month. That little trigger happens in this set of e-news goes out to new people for the list. Maybe it's things that introduce people to different products they're selling or whatever it is. I know I've experienced it with Snagit software, where they'll send you some tutorial. Have you tried this in Snagit? You know, they'll give you a few days and they'll send you another one just to kind of keep you mm-hmm. engaged with it. But that concept, just like you said, Martin, of doing that kind of automated email in a church setting so that people that are new to your e-news get to know your church a little bit or whatever it may be that you want to communicate with them. I really like John's idea of applying that there, and I'm excited about his talk, his sectional at the EdTech Lead Summit.
So without further ado, why don't we play that interview where he talks a little bit more about what he's doing and a little bit of a tease of what you might be in store if you were to attend this session of John's next summer.
Joining us today, we have John Rudot, who is one of our presenters, actually a double presenter at Wells EdTech Lead 19. We're coming up on an exciting conference next summer, John, and we're excited to have you there with us. We have actually had you on Wells Tech in the past, but it was kind of ancient history. It was way back in 2010. So I'm guessing unless they're really devout listeners, they may not remember who John Rudot is. So maybe you could start by introducing yourself a bit.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Well, I'm a Wells member. I was a staff minister for about 15 years. And now I am running two businesses, Accomplishing Success and Outside the Box Family. I've been married to my wife, Carol Ann, for 22 years, have six kids, ages 21 to 12. She homeschools them, and we're members at the Corps in Appleton.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for all of that service and all the exciting things going on there. We are happy to have you presenting. One topic in particular we wanted to talk about today: how to use MailChimp to send automated encouraging emails. Maybe a good place to start would be by asking you how churches and schools might be using MailChimp, in case people aren't familiar. Just kind of general use, what is it and how they might be using it.
Sure. MailChimp is like an email manager for sending out mass emails to a large audience. So typically it's probably used to send newsletters or announcements and manage the email lists. And it takes care of sending out all the emails to all your recipients and complying with the spam laws and everything, so you don't have to deal with that. And that's primarily what people are using it for. And it's free for the first 2,000 subscribers. So it's a good price point to start with.
We like free, definitely.
Talk a little bit more about subscribers, John. Does that mean that anybody receiving it can control how they receive it? Can they unsubscribe? Can they do anything else with their subscription? Describe that experience and why that's important.
Yeah. So when you set up your email list, you can add or subtract as many fields, like how much information you want to know about them or what they could fill out if they wanted to. And usually people sign up by having a form online where they say, yep, sign me up for the newsletter. Or in churches and schools, maybe they do it in person or sign up on a pen and paper list. And then you know that you have their permission. And that's the key, is that they have to give you permission to email to them. And then once the email newsletters start going out, always at the bottom, there's always the footer that says, if you no longer want to receive this email, you can click here. Or if you want to change your email preferences, you may have newsletters or announcements that go out more than once a week. And so they can change that setting to maybe be once a week instead of twice a week or something, however you set up your email campaign.
I can say that's definitely the way to go. I was thinking back to some days way in the past where we used to send out emails to the congregation or whatever, and it was just everybody's email address in the two places.
Yeah.
And they were exposed to all the other people that were receiving the emails, and there was no unsubscribe link or anything. So much nicer to have MailChimp handling all that kind of stuff for you, for sure.
Yeah.
So what you've described is traditional use, once a week newsletter or something like that. I get that from my congregation that we're still members of in New Ulm. But your session in particular talked about automated encouraging emails. So maybe explain the difference between the traditional use of MailChimp and what you mean by automated.
Automated would be what I'm talking about is where you set a system up once and you let it run, and you can let you can reach more people that way because you don't have to custom make an email message each time. So in the particular case that I'll be demonstrating at the conference, Ministry Leadership Institute has a 30-day email encouraging program or a 30-week email encouraging program. And so you can pick which one you want. But there, they have these encouraging emails that are sent out once a day or once a week, and they developed the material once, and then people can subscribe and get those throughout the year, and they don't have to keep reinventing the reel or keep track of who's on what day because it's all set up for them. So now, in a more general sense, I was thinking you could use that. Maybe you want like an Advent devotional series or a Lenten devotional series. You could do maybe some follow-up stuff for when visitors come and then they, you know, sign the guest register or the communication card, that you could have, you already know this is the information we want to send them, maybe in a 3-week period or however long you want to do it, not to bombard them. You know, you want maybe once a week you send them an encouraging email, but you already know the content that you're going to send them. And so you just set that up once and then it can go out.
And this all happens ahead of time. So you've done it once and you kind of set it and forget it. And once they're on the list, then they just kind of get part of the program, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. One thing that I know MailChimp does outside of just kind of the ability for somebody to subscribe and unsubscribe and automate this process is really helpful, I've found, is the analytics. Have you ever used that piece? And how would you encourage a congregation or a school to use that? What can that tell them? And how does that inform their use of the system?
Sure. What's really nice about that is it'll tell you, you know, how many people have opened it. And it can even get granular down to who opened the email and who didn't. And so if some people, like you're seeing, like this person hasn't opened this email ever, well, then maybe you have a wrong email address, or maybe it's going to a different folder. Maybe their spam filter is picking it up, and then you can contact them and ask them, you know, did you get my emails? And try to address that. But then the opening, you know, how many people have opened it, you can see whether or not which topics got a lot of opens, or maybe which time frames when you send them out, all kinds of stuff.
So you can kind of look at that and tweak things as you go to hopefully improve it. Just get good stewardship, yep, you know, along the way, just making sure you're recognizing how successful or effective it is and make some changes if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe tell us a little bit about this MailChimp interface. So if I sign up for an account, do I need like a PhD to be able to understand all these analytics and how to manage my list and things like that?
No, MailChimp does a pretty good job of keeping it simple and having tutorials and helpful menus and little help icons that pop up to help you out. But basically, you set up your account and you create your first list, and doing that sets up a lot of the parameters for your MailChimp account that will be used over and over again. And then you can create your first list, your email list, and what I always do is just create like a small little test list of just a couple of email addresses that I made for myself for testing so that I can test it out. And then you can create your first email template and then your first campaign. And your campaign kind of puts it all together. It connects the lists with your emails and the scheduling and puts it all together in the package. And then you can send it out. And you can always test it along the way. They have a nice feature there to send a test email so you can see what it looks like in an email box or on your phone before it goes out live.
And does MailChimp help you in that creation process? Do they have templates? You know, what kind of tools are at your disposal when you're actually creating the content?
There's tons of templates that you can pick from in MailChimp. And then once you pick a template, you can customize it. So let's say you like most of the design, but not all of it, or you want to change the color scheme. You can do all that online in their editor. So it's pretty intuitive. You know, WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get kind of set up.
And that comes as part of their free package as well?
Yep, that's part of their free package.
Okay, great.
Tell us a little bit about your other session that you'll be doing. What's the title of it and who might be interested in it? I'm going to say it was WordPress associated.
Yeah. Okay. So I submitted a bunch of topics to you guys.
Sure.
So the WordPress one, that one I'm going to talk about how to create a WordPress website for your ministry. If that's the right fit for you,
excellent.
You know, I think Find-A-Web is a good solution for those who are starting out. But if you want to take it to the next level, you can use WordPress, and then I'd walk you through how you could do that and what the advantages are.
Two great sessions to look forward to from John. We are happy to have you joining us and thankful for the time you dedicated to speaking with us today. So blessings, and we'll look forward to seeing you next June.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, John, for joining us.
You're welcome.
John, thanks again. We're really looking forward to both of your presentations for next summer and your willingness to do that. This concept of automating emails, encouraging emails, I think is really going to be a blessing to some, especially those that maybe are challenged with volunteers. This seems like a way to really ease the burden on the church or school office and use technology to the benefit there.
Just what we want technology to do for us in a ministry setting, be a servant that helps us with our needs. So great topic there. I'm looking forward to it, along with 70 plus more presentations. We've only talked to two presenters so far, Martin, and we're batting 1,000. I'm really amazed at the slate of presenters we've put together for the conference, and looking forward to sharing more of that on Wells Tech in the future.
Yep. And our focus is a little narrower than the conference itself. So if you're listening thinking, well, it's just going to be focused on, the small, small areas of technology, you'd be wrong. We have a real interesting cross-section of individuals that are going to be there, from educators to early childhood ministry folks, to technologists, to leaders, of all stripes. And I think that cross-section is going to make this a really valuable conversation that's going to go on next summer. So I think I'm excited about that.
Yeah, valuable in a couple of ways. I think the sectionals are outstanding, like I've already said, but I think that networking opportunities with a whole group of people, rather than it just being a segmented group of technologists versus educators versus leaders, that's just going to open up a lot more possibilities for the people that attend. Very excited. Mm-hmm. I'm also excited, Martin, about the website and how it's developing. If any of our listeners have visited wellsedtechlead.com, you may not see many changes right now visible to the public visitor, but we are working hard behind the scenes to put together something new and different that hadn't been done very much in our circles, and that is a paperless conference. So a little bit on the technology side of things, we made a decision as a committee that we would present all the registration materials, all the descriptions of sectionals and keynotes and worship events and the exciting pre-conferences that are going to be happening, all of that online only. And it's a really easy to use website, and it's very mobile friendly. So you can
that's the key right there.
Get all of it on your smartphone if that's what you want to do. And so it does take a lot of work to put 80 plus sectionals and pre-conference and worship and keynote ideas out there. And that's where a lot of us are working behind the scenes to make that happen. Plus, obviously working on a registration form. All of that is just about a month away from going live on the website. So if you're chomping at the bit to get registered, look for that sometime in late December. We're getting close.
Yep. Be the first in. You get the early bird pricing as well, and that would be a good thing to pay attention to. So if you haven't actually signed up yet to get the notification, because we'll surely send out a notification that registration is open, just go to the website, Wells EdTech Lead. That's WellsEdTechLead.com, and you're going to find out all of that information. There's a couple links there about the venue, good promo stuff there if you want to share that with others as well. Maybe you can't go, but maybe there's other people on your faculty or staff or in your congregation that you might think would be interested. Please share that with them.
And just 31 weeks, 6 days, and 9 hours from now, it will be warm in Wisconsin Dells, and we will be able to enjoy a water park to celebrate. So come join us at the Kalahari. It should be a fun time.
Even if it's not warm, they have an indoor.
That's right. We're covered.
Indoor lots of stuff.
It'll be warm there.
I think they claim they're the biggest water park in Wisconsin. Maybe,
cool.
Maybe even beyond. I don't know. It's huge. Mm-hmm. They've done some cool stuff there. So All right, let's move on to our news in tech segment and some good news, bad news from Flickr.
Yeah, I had to do a little bit of research to learn about this. We got an email last week as our Wells Tech group has an account on Flickr. I've been getting them for my personal Flickr accounts as well. And it's basically a notification that they're going to begin charging for storage space. So free members are going to be limited to just 1,000 files. And I had to kind of do a little digging. I thought I remembered that that was a really unlimited amount in the past. And it had previously been 1 terabyte of free storage is what they had been promised. That was back in the day when Yahoo owned Flickr. I didn't realize, but Flickr was purchased in April of this year by SmugMug. And they just came out with an announcement last week that instead of 1 terabyte of free storage, they're going to limit free customers to 1,000 files stored on the Flickr servers. And beyond that, if you want to store more, you're going to need to pay $49.99 per year for the pro version of Flickr. Now, they're throwing in a lot of niceties with that pro version, more analytics and different things. And they are offering a 30% discount if you register for the pro version before November 30th of this year. So a little bit of a break in that first year of pricing. So that would make the price around $35, I think. So we are in a conundrum because
it's a challenging spot.
The thing that we've used Flickr for was a few years back when we had a Wells Tech challenge every month for people to donate imagery to a royalty-free image library. We call it our Wells Tech Challenge album. It's still out on Flickr, going strong and having visitors, and people are making use of the images that are out there. But unfortunately, that challenge album by itself has over 1,000 images. In it. It has 1,087 files connected just with the challenge album. And so beyond that, we have some other files on our Flickr account, some other images from past conferences and things like that, that we really don't want to lose. And the way that Flickr's doing this is that as of January 8th, so they've given you fair warning mid-November, by January 8th, if you aren't a pro member and you have over 1,000 files, you won't be able to upload any more files to your Flickr account. By February 5th, they're going to delete your content down to 1,000 files. So they said they would start with the oldest content first, but you aren't going to even get to be grandfathered in to keep the files that you have out there. They're going to slim it down to the most recent 1,000 files that you've uploaded to your Flickr account. So we need to figure out a solution, and we thought what better way to do that than to ask our audience, our Wells Tech community, if they had ideas for us on what to do about the Wells Tech Challenge album.
I mean, and we're not opposed to paying, you know, $49.99, or is that the 30% off of that even,
right,
for the first year? Mm-hmm. We're not opposed to paying that if we feel that we're getting that value out of the service. One of the concepts that we kind of carried through the challenge, which was fun, and then the maintenance of this site, is that we wanted to find a service that people probably were already on and could donate pretty easily. But if Flickr is going, basically, I view this mostly as a, you're really going to have to pay if you want to use a service to any great degree. Most people have more than 1,000 photos that they'd want to keep there. I'm wondering whether people are going to be leaving Flickr and whether we should be, you know, maybe we're going to be left in a ghost town there, and maybe there's another service that would be better for us to contribute. Basically, the requirements are we're looking for a place that's fairly economical, if not free, where we can store these photos, we can tag them, make them available free for everybody's use, and then still encourage our Wells Tech listeners to upload their photos. So we may have another photo challenge, and that was kind of fun, where we each month we had a different theme, and we asked people to upload, and there was a process for that where they used a form, and then we posted it there, and it's just free for everybody to use. So we just don't want to get stuck. And we think we might be if we kind of stick with Flickr. So if you have ideas, thoughts for where we could go, if there is a better alternative, bring it on. We'd love to hear about it.
Definitely. You know, Martin, it made me think a little bit about the grandiose promises were made in the world of the internet. You know, a few years ago, I think we probably talked about it on Wells Tech, that Yahoo was offering 1 terabyte of free storage for your Flickr accounts. And that changed pretty drastically. And I can imagine that there are many people that have a lot more than 1,087 files, you know, on Flickr. Right. And, you know, the bottom line is, especially with free services, you really are at their whim to, you know, whatever their policies may change to. So, you know, as you're making considerations for whatever tools you use in your church and school or personally, you know, you got to keep that in mind, that there's no guarantee that's going to be there the next day.
Yep. So we live it, and this isn't the first time this kind of thing has happened. There are other services we've had to jump ship on. I'm kind of bullish on the fact that Flickr is going to get better. It hasn't done a lot recently, but now with SmugMug purchasing them, SmugMug's platform I thought was very good. I'd use that as well. And I think Flickr will get better, but I just want to make sure that this is the best solution for our purposes. So let us know. Sally, that's not all that's in news and tech.
So much news to share. Big announcement out of Samsung. It was kind of an interesting way that they announced it, but Samsung had a developers conference last week. Just like Apple and Google and all those biggies, they pull together people to show off their new tools and products that they're developing. And one of the things they showed was something that had been rumored for quite a while with the Samsung smartphones, and it's something they're calling Infinity Flex, and it is basically a tablet-sized device that folds in half and is small enough to fit in your pocket. It's more smartphone-sized after being folded in half. What was mysterious about it was they actually dimmed the lights because they don't have this ready for market yet. They were showing a developer's version of it, and they didn't want to show it exactly as it was. So they dimmed the lights so you could only see like a silhouette of it, and you could see the screen and the icons showing on the screen. It's really cool when they fold it in half. The icons show on the folded screen as well. So you see it tablet size, then they fold it in half and the icons show as well. We'll include a link in the show notes that has a little GIF that shows their demonstration of that. But new technology coming all the time, Martin, and I, for one, have very old eyes and like bigger screens, and so the concept of being able to have both, have my big screen and a smaller screen, is pretty appealing to me. It looks exciting.
Right. Yeah, this is amazing to me that this is even possible. If you'd kind of thought about this 15, 20 years ago, you'd never believe that this was in the near future, even. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing what they can do with this technology these days.
For sure.
We'll see if it has ministry application once it gets here, if we're still around, and we can talk about it. But Samsung is quite the innovator, and they, I think, are taking some pretty large steps. Their phones, while they're very expensive, just like iPhones are, they have some really cool technology in some of these things. So we'll see what happens.
All right.
What's going on in Wells? There's news there, too.
Sure. We are in the middle of an Interactive Faith Bible study session. Those that aren't familiar, Interactive Faith is a online Bible study led by a real-time leader, typically over a several-week period, where they take a particular topic and lead Bible study. And the idea is that you tune in online and even tune in with a group of people, perhaps project the Bible study in your church or school setting and gather around at Bible study time and watch the real-time presentation. There are pauses where people are working on questions and discussing with small groups and things like that. The leader brings you back and you continue with the Bible study. And the current Bible study is called To the Ends of the Earth, Beginning in Your Backyard. It's led by our brand new administrator of evangelism working there at the Center for Mission Ministry. That's Pastor Eric Recker. And Pastor Recker is, I know last week he led the Bible study in front of a live group. Is he continuing that, Martin?
Yes, he is. Awesome. Yep, he's meeting in Lannan at 6 o'clock. If you're in the area, stop on by.
So
that's St. John's Lannan.
Good deal. The dates are this Wednesday, November 14th, and then in 2 weeks, November 28th, skipping the week of Thanksgiving. So two more sessions for that To the Ends of the Earth, Beginning in Your Own Backyard Bible study. We'll have a link in the show notes. There's lesson material you can download from the website and follow along.
And another neat part about this is if you can't do it real time, you can always download the resources on your own schedule. So even if you want to have men's Bible study, women's Bible study, general Bible study, where this is your teacher, this is the material you use. You can simply play the video off of the site as well. Use the same materials, get kind of the same experience, except it's not real time with people across the globe. But you can do it right in your own home or in your own congregation or school. So
good stuff.
Let's move on to our picks of the week.
And my pick of the week is just a fun little utility. I don't know if you'd call it a utility. It's a Thanksgiving happiness kind of website. It's called the Thankful Bot, and it's coming from the Noun Project. Martin, I think we've talked about the Noun Project on the show before, but it's basically a site where they've gathered icons to represent all different nouns. I think they might even have some verbs out there now, but yeah, the focus was on nouns, and you could go there and search on anything, from dogs to, actually, my husband searched on Jesus, and icons came up representing Jesus Christ, and there's just all kinds of things out there. Basically, if you go to the Thankful Bot, you are prompted with two empty lines to fill in things that you're thankful for. I'm thankful for blank and blank. And so as an example, I have one I'll post a link to in the show notes where I typed, I'm thankful for technology and podcasting, and it presented icons for me to choose from that represented those two things. And then it creates a little graphic with your icons. Instead of the words, I've got two icons I'm thankful for, and then the two icons that represent technology and podcasting. And you can download the image, you can share it on social media, just kind of a way to pause and be thankful for some things. I thought that some might enjoy this. This might be a neat thing to share even on a church Facebook page or something like that, where you could invite people to do it and post their what they're thankful for. We did it in our family, and we got all kinds of things. My daughter-in-law in North Dakota said she was thankful for her heater, and there was an icon for a heater. So, I mean, it was just all over the place. Kevin got a beautiful icon, actually, for Jesus Christ that was really nice. So, there was just all kinds. And so, again, something cool that you might just engage some people, have some fun in social media, on your Facebook page or wherever.
Yeah, I typed in wife and children and got some neat images there. Except on the children's side, I have three kids, and it only gives me the option for two or five.
Well, there's a little icon off to the side where you can refresh and
get some inspiration.
I'm wrong. But if you do type children like in the other line or something like that, it gives you different options. So there's a lot of children icons out there. You just have to kind of delete it and retype it until you see one that fits nicely.
Yeah, there's a need some inspiration button there.
That's
too, which
right.
Gives you some interesting results. So right after children, I got wife and breakdancing.
Oh,
so
there you go. I got snakes.
I'm very thankful for breakdancing. Really?
Yeah. I was really going to type snakes. You just didn't know that. And it sensed that and said I was thankful.
Who isn't thankful for snakes?
Wow. Yeah,
no. That's a great purpose.
Anyway.
We talked about snakes last Sunday in our Bible study, and we were talking about the role of men and women, and there was a snake in Genesis there.
There was.
So not overly thankful for that particular snake.
It reminds me of being at the Creation Museum, and they had some really good depictions of the Garden of Eden and the snake and everything.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Nice. All right. My pick of the week, and I think I've had a variation of this in previous years, but as we come up on Thanksgiving and the shopping season, my attention sometimes turns to Amazon for whatever reason. And there's a cool feature, if you're a Prime member, called Amazon Prime Households. And I'll put a link in the show notes to an FAQ there on how to enjoy your or share your Amazon Prime benefits with your household. And there's a link there to get a little bit more information on how to create a household. But that household could include one adult, one other adult, so usually your spouse, and some kids as well. And you get to share the shipping benefits, of course, with Amazon Prime. And there's other things that are related to shipping now, depending on where you live, but also some digital benefits. So Prime Video, Prime Reading, Prime Photos, Family Vault, Amazon First Reads, and then other discounts and exclusives that the whole family gets to take advantage of. So if you and your wife both have Amazon accounts, you can link those. One of the requirements to be part of the household, however, is that they share payment methods, which you know usually isn't a problem. But this is brought to my attention because my wife and I, for our after-dinner devotion, are starting to go through the People's Bible produced by Northwestern Publishing House. And we selected the book of John, and I got the Kindle edition, and I thought, well, if she gets the Kindle edition, then we can both have our iPads open. She has an iPad as well, where we can read it together. And I thought, well, there's got to be a way for me to just share the purchase that I made. And while it's not totally intuitive, it is possible to share everything that she purchases or I purchase with each other, and it'll show up in our Kindle library. So that's probably a, you know, pick 1A, 1 and 1A, where great devotional content coming out of those People's Bibles where it kind of goes through the entire book with a nice running commentary in plain English with references or in the Kindle version, links to other Bible verses. It's really easy to kind of jump around, make notes, those kinds of things. But I was really happy that I didn't have to buy it twice. I could share it with my spouse. We could both read it together, take turns with paragraphs, or she reads a night, I read a night, and didn't have to buy it twice. So check out Amazon Prime. If you're not an Amazon Prime member, then yeah, maybe worth looking at just for that purpose. But Amazon Prime Households is a kind of a cool thing. And then just jumping in with some of these Kindle books that usually are a little bit cheaper. Now the price between, or the price difference will vary between that and a paper copy depending on how big the book is. But typically it's a little bit cheaper, but the convenience of it and then being able to share it is a real blessing to us. So we're enjoying that. So that's my pick of the week.
That's good stuff, Martin. Being able to share it is logical. If you have a paper book, you would be able to share that. So it makes sense you'd be able to on a Kindle. However, I've looked for that for a long, long time and haven't found it. So I'm just curious, are you going to be doing that Amazon support now on that if people need help?
I'll support you.
And then I can support everybody else. I see where this is going. Yeah, right. Never mind. I didn't ask.
Actually, I had to hunt and I had to do a little searching for it, but you actually have to go into your profile and that whole long list of orders and doing this and Prime benefits and that. There's something in there called content you got to click on. And it is a little complicated. I'm not sure Amazon's really excited about promoting it, but it's there.
Cool. Good to know.
Maybe I'll do a screencast in a future episode on how exactly I did that. But it's pretty cool once you find it.
Awesome.
All right. Let's move on to ministry resources. And we've shared this in the past, but the time is now. There are some great resources coming out of our congregational services group. And it is Christmas time. So they have a whole program called C18, obviously Christmas 18, and the resources that are available here are simply awesome. They've got worship folder templates for Sundays in Advent and Christmas, evangelism materials for Christmas Eve, training for Friendship Eve Invitational Witnessing, Advent devotional, school resources, special needs ministry. So basically, all the corners of congregational services got together and said, what can we provide to our congregations? They've done a nice job with these materials, and we'll put a link to this location in the show notes. But now is the time. Some of these resources are free or very inexpensive. Sometimes they can be shipped to you, or you can pick them up. There are lots of good things out here for whatever area of ministry you represent. So if you're interested in, if you're a principal or teacher, they've got these school resources. And if you're a worship leader, choir director, special ministries person, etc., it's all there. So you may want to check this out. It's very well done.
Excellent. And it's interesting how you can go to the website, and it's all really nicely organized by all those different areas you were describing, and find the downloads for exactly what you're looking for. So I think they've done a great job. It's kind of a new website that they're using this year, and it's really well laid out.
It is. All right, let's move on to community feedback, that time where we look at different things that other people have shared with each other or with us that we like to highlight on the show.
And we have a couple of things to share today. One of them is from our Wells Tech Google group, and that's basically an email-type group. You can obviously read the post online as well. They're archived in a Google group website. But one of the people that contributes there is Benjamin Matsky, who's the audio-video guy at MLC, and he actually has an amplifier that MLC is willing to donate to a congregation or school. It says it's 150 watts per channel, and he's willing to put in a pro-grade rack mount cassette player if that is desired. So if you're interested, I haven't seen anyone reply to Benj yet. If you're interested, you certainly could get his contact information and get in touch with him through the Wells Tech Google group. He's got a picture of the amplifier out there for you to see what it looks like.
Not a bad price.
Yeah, for sure. Another group that we keep tabs on and find lots of good resources to share from is the Tech Tools for Wells Teachers group, which is a new group that was recently formed on Facebook by our friends Rachel Pearson and Rachel Feld. And recently, one of them, I think it was Rachel Feld, shared a link to a ebook that's available for free. It's called 101 Google Lesson Ideas, and it's from a website called Ditch That Textbook. And I think Rachel commented that if you follow the blog at Ditch That Textbook, a lot of this will be a repeat. It's kind of a compilation of a lot of his blog articles, but it's very well done and worth the read, and certainly at a great price, a free price to get this ebook. So something that interests you, head on over to the link we'll have in the show notes to find 101 Google Lesson Ideas.
Yeah, and if you're not a part, if you're a teacher and you, or even if you're not a teacher, they'll let you in, want to be a part of that Facebook group, it is, you have to request to be added. But Tech Tools for Wells Teachers on Facebook is actually a very happening place. The folks there really take this seriously, and I think there's probably a great resource every week we look.
Definitely. All right, one more community feedback item is actually a question that we got from Lee Webster, who follows our Facebook page for Wells Tech, and she reached out to us and asked about training materials or anyone that has experience with the Salesforce software. Salesforce is an online database management software primarily targeted to salesmen and tracking their customer relations, but congregations are using it to track their prospects, people that they've made contact with who might be interested in learning more and becoming members of their church. And the idea that struck me, Martin, the person that I know of that has used it and shared with us the most is Pastor Daniel Bondo, who's at Grace Milwaukee. And this is kind of old stuff, but it was from our Wells Tech Conference 2015 when Pastor Bondo did a presentation as part of our Ignite event and kind of shared how Grace was using Salesforce. So I pointed Lee to that resource, but I will share that link in the show notes. You have to, you know, scrub through the file to about 30 minutes in before Pastor Bondo was actually the speaker on stage and talking about Salesforce. But a good reminder of that Ignite event as well, because we're going to do something similar at EdTech Lead 19, where we ask those attending if they would present some kind of innovation that's happened in their church or school at an evening event, and we'll have some good prizes available and things like that. So for people that are listening, if you're at Wells Tech Conference 2015, you may remember the Ignite event. It was well received, a lot of fun, a very good event, and we're hoping to do something similar next summer. So start thinking along those lines.
Yep, usually a big prize for one lucky presenter as well. So let's go on or conclude the show with a video of the week, Sally.
And our video will follow this show's theme, EdTech Lead 19, the Technology and Education Summit coming up next summer. We have an amazing promotional video that was put together by a group of us, and you may even recognize the narrator on the video. I don't know. You'll have to take a listen and see. I will say that my claim to fame are the last few frames of the video where it shows a screen and the EdTech Lead website. So watch it and see my computer screen. It's exciting. So
yes, worth the price of admission there.
We'd encourage people to share the video as well. Just help us spread the word. The more people know about it, the better.
As well. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So, well, if you can't tell, we're excited about next summer's event. I think that's going to be a super fun thing. Mm-hmm. So, and we'd like to have you there as well. To do some kind of meetup, something where we get our Wells Tech listeners together somehow.
That would be awesome.
All right, Sally, we're going to try and do this again next week. What's our topic?
Well, I am really looking forward to next week's topic because we have a special interview to share with Northern Wisconsin District President Pastor Joel Zank. And Pastor Zank gives us a little bit of a peek behind the curtain of the work of the district presidents, particularly in relation to call lists that are generated for churches and schools. It's a busy season for that kind of thing right now, and he tells us a little bit about that work. And of course, in relation to how technology helps along the way.
Looking forward to that. We had a great conversation with Joel. So that's going to do it for 575. We'll put a bow on that. And we hope that you found something useful here. And we'll come back next week for 576. Thanks so much for being here. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.